This afternoon, decreasing cloudiness with a high of 37 and a north wind from 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts to 30 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly clear and colder, the low 22. The wind will be from the north at 5 to 10 miles per hour. The wind will shift after midnight coming out of the southeast. Tomorrow, sunny and warmer with a high of 45. The wind from the southwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly clear with a low of 28. Wednesday, sunny with a high of 45. Wednesday night, mostly clear with a low of 25. Thursday through Thursday night, mostly cloudy with a high in the upper 40s and a low around 40. Friday, cloudy with a chance of rain and a high in the mid-50s. At noon Central Time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from the low 30s to the low 40s. To our northwest, skies were clearing. At Chicago's O'Hare Airport, 32 degrees at the top of the hour, 30 at Bloomington, 34 at Peoria and Mattoon, 39 at Carbondale. In South Bend, 31, 34 at Lafayette, 38 at Indianapolis, Terre Haute, 35 in Evansville, 41. Willard Airport reported a cloudy sky at the top of the hour, the temperature 32. The dew point 27, the relative humidity 81%, the wind out of the north at 21 miles per hour, giving us a wind chill of 20, the barometric pressure 30.06 and rising, and at 12:39, 32 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. For nearly 150 years, a historically black private university in Nashville has prided itself on its liberal arts studies and its music. Vocal ensembles at Fisk University have been there about as long as the campus. But the songs performed there today might well have sounded very different had it not been for the efforts of one of the school's first music directors. A new CD from Champaign-based Archaeophone Records shines a light on the efforts of John Work II. It's called There Breathes a Hope. And as Illinois Public Media's Jeff Bossert reported on NPR's Weekend Edition Saturday, it also reopens a debate over whether so-called Negro spirituals are integral parts of America's music history or cruel reminders of slavery.
Between 1909 and 1916, the Fisk Jubilee Quartet recorded more than 40 songs.
There is a farm in Gilead who makes the wound their home.
The tenor with the eerily high voice in this recording is John Work II. He was a scholar, musician, and anthropologist who collected these songs from the days of slavery, had them published, and recorded many of them with the quartet.
Sometimes I grow discouraged. I think my work's in vain. But then the Holy Spirit refines my soul again.
When Work came to Fisk University in 1891, the institution had already used music as a way to save the school from insolvency. The first Fisk Jubilee singers toured the world performing for Queen Victoria, and what they were performing was just as significant. They switched from operatic arias to religious songs. But by the time Work came to Fisk, the choir had disbanded and was all but forgotten, in part because of those very songs.
Because of their very sacred nature, they had been an essential part of the insular slave worship.
Author Doug Saroff has traced the earliest history of black vocal harmonies and wrote the liner notes for the new collection.
Further, white minstrel performers had seized on the spiritual songs and subjected them to parody and ridicule, ridiculing the slaves' religion as well as the songs.
Saroff says there was a reluctance to perform spirituals following emancipation because they were seen as a degrading reminder of slave life. He says freedmen were anxious to put this era behind them and saw a college education as a way to achieve that. But Saroff says Work saw things differently.
For John Work, the spirituals preserved the religious faith and wisdom of his forebears, and he took great pride in the racial heritage of sacred folk music, and especially the fact that the songs in his mind contained no trace of hatred or revenge against the slave masters and oppressors.
John Work II was the son of a slave, and he eventually convinced the university to let the singers go back out on tour.
You got a cross, all against you, you got a cross. When they get to heaven, gonna lay down the cross.
Reduced from a chorus to men's quartet for financial reasons, they made their first recordings in 1909 for the Victor label.
I got a crown, you got a crown, all the God's children got a crown. When they get to heaven, gonna put on the crown, I'm gonna shout all the God's heaven, heaven, heaven. Everybody talk about the heaven, ain't it going there, heaven, heaven, gonna shout all the God's heaven.
The Fisk Jubilee Quartet became messengers for black music, says Tim Brooks, author of the book Lost Sounds, the history of the earliest African-American recordings.
They only toured in the North, of course, usually to a kind of an upper-educated group in churches and things like that. They didn't play vaudeville or broad-based entertainment. So when those records came out from Victor, the big record company, in 1910, they spread across the country, and people everywhere, including people who would never allow a black person in their front parlor, bought those records.
Some blacks felt the Fisk Jubilee singers were pandering to white audiences, but Brooks says there were fans, including Bohemian composer Antonin Dvorak, who believed black Americans should look to their own roots and traditions for music and build on them.
Another very prominent school of thought was that, no, they should show that they can do everything that the white man can do and do it as well or even better. That is, follow the European tradition, go into great art, and show how well they could do it. Roland Hayes himself pursued that very, very strictly.
Roland Hayes was the most prominent singer to come out of the Fisk Jubilee Quartet. Hayes went on to become a lyric tenor. Translating the power of his voice and the rest of the quartet recordings for modern ears turned out to be a challenge for Richard Martin, co-owner of Archaeophone Records. He says the shellac discs and wax cylinders compiled for this CD set were released years before standard playback speeds existed. And with only a cappella voices to guide him, Martin sought some advice.
The recommended speeds, as they applied, made this material sound like it was funeral music. And by consulting with an expert and testing out some theories and comparing it to what we knew about what the group was supposed to sound like, we were able to make the changes to the pitching that made it much more vibrant, much more jubilant, and it just clicked.
Surprisingly, John Work II's contributions to African-American music on the Fisk campus were largely overshadowed by those of his son. John Work III spent more than 40 years at Fisk, not only as a student and teacher, but leader of the Jubilee Singers, and was the first African-American chair of the school's music department. Today, Anthony Williams is an associate professor of music at Fisk. He did his dissertation on John Work III, who he knew.
The research his son did was more extensive. Therefore, he probably overshadowed his father in that regard. But I believe without his father's work, I'm not sure where his son would have been in terms of his work and his research.
John Work II left the Fisk campus under a cloud. It's unclear whether he was dismissed or quit, perhaps because the university remained uncomfortable with the kind of music he championed. For NPR News, I'm Jeff Bossert.
I don't know what my mother wants to stay here for. This old world ain't no friend to her.
Because the old army got grounded. Home and it don't be. Home and it don't be close tomorrow. Home and it don't be close tomorrow. Because the old army got grounded. Home and it don't be. Home and it don't be close tomorrow. Home and it don't be close tomorrow. Because the old army got grounded. Home and it don't be.
Some of these morning bright and fair, gonna hoist my wings and flee the air,
because the old army got gone.
Further information on Archaeophone record CD There Breathes a Hope and other recordings by the Fisk Jubilee Quartet can be found by going to our website, will.illinois.edu.
At age 86, Ella Jenkins has been singing to and with children for more than 50 years.
Oh, the cuckoo, she's a pretty bird. The thank yous and their smiles. This makes me thrive more. So I just keep going.
Ella Jenkins on Making Music with Kids, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on AM 580 and from 5 to 7 on FM 90.9.
On February 15th, the House of Representatives passed H.R. 1, the continuing resolution, which eliminates federal funding for public broadcasting. Now the Senate will draft its version. It makes a difference when your senators hear from you that federal funding for public broadcasting is important. Contact information's at will.illinois.edu. Stay informed at 170millionamericans.org. Thanks.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 28th of February, 2011. It's the birthday of Michel de Montaigne, born in Bordeaux, France, 1533, the essayist who said, "The highest of wisdom is continual cheerfulness. Such a state, like the region above the moon, is always clear and serene." It's the birthday of the novelist Colin McCann, born in Dublin, 1965. His book, Let the Great World Spin, came out in 2009. Grew up in suburban Dublin, middle class, house full of books, majored in journalism, came to the United States at 21, wanted to write a novel. He hopped on a 15-speed Schwinn and rode it around the country, 12,000 miles, through 40 states, collecting stories all along the way. Colin McCann, who said he's had a happy life, so it doesn't make for an interesting story. He said, "For me, the logical conclusion is that I have to write about outside my life." So he said, "Every time he writes a book, I take a brand new 3-year crash course in that which I want to know." To research one novel, he lived with homeless people in subway tunnels. For another, he went to Russia. For one, he looked at maps in the New York Public Library, then went off to Eastern Europe to wander through the gypsy camps. His epic, Let the Great World Spin, set in the 1970s, weaving the stories of a dozen New York protagonists, including prostitutes, a young radical Irish monk,